The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Bodhidharma faced the wall. The second ancestor stood in the snow, cut off his arm, and said, "Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest." Bodhidharma said, "Bring me your mind, and I will put it to rest." The second ancestor said, "I've searched for my mind, but I can't find it." Bodhidharma said, "I've completely put it to rest for you." I appreciated Melissa Roshi's remarks in her half of the Taisho this morning about the legendary and even folkloric elements of this koan. This is not a historical account that we're reading from, but this is a story that was passed in the wind, that went from mouth to mouth for centuries, taking different forms, taking on different elements, maybe things drifting into it from similar tales or tales about people with similar names. And so usually with this koan, when I encounter the detail about Weka cutting off his arm, I like to think, yeah, that probably didn't happen. That's not really part of the story. I'm not going to worry about that. But this time, approaching the koan, and the koans change as we change, this time something else struck me, which was to think, well, what is this gesturing towards? After all, Wu Men put it in the koan. What can I see in this? And what came up for me was the image of a fox in a trap. And we've all heard that a fox will chew off its leg if its leg is in a trap. This too sounds like it might be a legend, but it's not. One study showed that one out of four trap foxes chewed off their paw, their leg. One fourth of a lot of foxes. And this shows the value to them of freedom. This is how desperately a fox wants to be free. And so it struck me that this is an image of how desperately Weka wants to be free. This path that we're on, we sometimes think of as a way of liberation. We talk about freeing all beings. So this is a way of freedom. And it struck me that Weka, the second ancestor's great determination to be free, could be a real inspiration for me. And I didn't have to dismiss that weird little element of the koan anymore. And it also struck me that maybe the freedom that Weka is searching for is not the freedom that he gets. Sometimes, maybe most of the time, we come to Zen wanting something that is ultimately not on offer. And I hear that when Weka says, "Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet." Maybe you came to Zen the first time because you wanted some peace of mind. You wanted the troubles to leave your mind. You wanted to be able to live in a state of equanimity and be able to accept everything without being upset. And some spiritual teachers claim that they can give you this. When I hear those claims, I put my hand on my wallet. I don't trust this. It's not my experience. But I think it's a valid way to come to Zen. It's just not a valid way to stay with Zen. Because if you insist on calmness and equanimity, you'll become more and more frustrated. And so Bodhidharma, in his great compassion, remembering that in the koan about Bodhidharma and Emperor Wu, Duke Chi says to the emperor, "Do you know who that was?" And when the emperor says, "I don't know," he says, "That was the great personage Guan Yin. That was the Bodhisattva of compassion in living human form." This is Bodhidharma channeling the Bodhisattva of compassion, something we're all capable of doing. And so in his great compassion, Bodhidharma says, "Bring me your mind and I will put it to rest." What a great invitation to wake up. We tend to think of our minds as something that's bounded, some bounded entity in a world of other bounded entities. And we use this kind of language about the mind all the time, as though it's a container and things are either inside of it or outside of it. And so I might say, "Stop putting ideas into my head," or "I can't get that song out of my head," or "I can't wrap my mind around this." What a funny way to think of the mind. Something that has, I don't know, is it like a big bag? Is it like a big box? This just keeps bouncing around in my head. So not so. The mind is boundless. The mind doesn't have boundaries. No one can say where the mind stops and the body starts. No neuroscientist can say it. No Zen practitioner can say it. We have different investigative methods, but we come to the same conclusion. No one can say where one person's mind stops and other minds start. Our minds are made of other minds, in large part, down to the very language that we use when that monologue that never seems to stop goes on in our head. Of course, it does stop sometimes. No one can say where the mind stops and where the environment starts. The mind is being constantly created and co-created, changed. Things come in, things go out. It's porous. It's not a thing at all. And I think this points the way to real freedom. And instead of saying more about that, I want to share a poem with you in concluding. A poem that gives me great encouragement. And this is a poem by Dogen, great 13th century Japanese teacher who, much as Bodhidharma brought Zen to China, brought Chan to China, Dogen brought Soto Zen to Japan. And Dogen wrote this poem, which I'll read to you twice. "The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. Even the waves breaking are reflecting its light. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. Even the waves breaking are reflecting its light." So in this lovely poem, at first we do get this image of a still mind. The moon, reflecting the moon of our Buddha nature, the light of our Buddha nature, luminous with it, glowing with it. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. And sometimes this happens. No one should say that the mind is never still. The problem is when we try to find a mind that will always be still. So sometimes the moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. And then if the poem ended there, I would not be reading it to you and I would not love it. But it goes on, even the waves breaking are reflecting its light. And there it is. Even the turbulent mind, even the mind ravaged by this and that, even the mind, all waves are reflecting its light. I like what happens too when we go from the moon reflected in a mind clear as still water to the waves breaking. When I read the first three lines, I think of a pond, maybe a pond deep in the woods, and the moon, full moon, fully reflected in it. I've seen such things many times, and that's the image that comes up to me. But then, even the waves breaking, suddenly that still pond in the deep woods has become the ocean. And we've gone from something that is bounded like a pond to something that's boundless. As Juliet says in Romeo and Juliet, my mind, boundless as the sea. She's talking about our love, but our minds too are boundless as the sea. A sea that is in constant motion. A sea that has tides, that is connected to the moon. A sea that is constantly being fed by rivers and is constantly sending its water up in clouds. No stillness there. No boundaries. Moments of stillness, yeah. Times of stillness, yes. But ultimately, the waves return and they break. And yet the moon, our luminous Buddha nature, the moon shines from the waves too. So my encouragement is to take this to your Zazen tonight. Take both the great determination of Weka and take also this boundlessness. Let your mind, both in its still moments and in its turbulent moments, let your mind receive the light of your own Buddha nature. Let it be radiant. I'll end by reading the poem one last time. The moon reflected in a mind clear as still water. Even the waves breaking are reflecting its light. Thank you.